Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a big docket for you today, so let's get to it. First, Barry Morphew had a hearing today. Second, were the Murdochs broke? Kind of looking like it. Third, the South Dakota Attorney General, you know, the guy that hits people with his cars, not going to be impeached. A confession is thrown out in a Florida quadruple homicide. Naomi Eron, the guy that was arrested, exercising his Fifth Amendment rights. An indictment in the Florida biker homicide case. Next, they will let anyone out of prison in California, apparently. Prison can be a dangerous place, particularly when you harm children. A police officer needs to realize that, well, everybody's always watching. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It is Wednesday, March 30th, 2022. Before we open the record, we got to do a little housekeeping. First, you know the drill. If you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button. Hit that little bell so you get notifications. And apparently, something must have happened because nobody watched yesterday's video. Apparently, nobody likes free speech. Or maybe that was just Google shutting us down. I don't know. Anyway, and if you can't watch us because they shut us down on YouTube, you can always listen to us on your favorite podcasting app simply by typing in Crime Talk with Scott Reich. And today's sponsor of the show, let's have a brief message from them. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, let's go ahead and open the record. Barry Morphew had a hearing today, and we weren't able to get it on WebEx because the judge is making everybody show up in person. But it looks like it was kind of a draw today. Now, a couple of things that did come out of the hearing are that the judge rules that a veterinarian that was expected to be called as an expert witness and testify how tranquilizer materials affect animals will not be allowed as an expert witness. I didn't have to be there in that courtroom to know that that makes complete sense. Who cares how tranquilizer materials affects an animal when we're talking about how it allegedly affect a human, unless that veterinarian has conducted tests or some sort of research as it relates to humans in various doses and quantities and various weights and sizes, it's simply not relevant. So that makes complete sense. And the prosecution wanted a canine handler to not testify in trial after learning today that he made a report but did not disclose it. Ooh, ouch. So we'll have to see how that shakes out as well. Now, there's going to be a Schreck hearing. A Schreck hearing is basically to hold a hearing to decide whether expert witnesses can testify at trial. That's going to be set for April 29th. Remember, we start the trial first week in May. Let's get real, people. This thing is moving along quickly, and we'll see if some of the sanctions that the defense was asking for are actually ever going to be granted. I think it's an extreme remedy, but as I said, what can the judge do? He can gut the prosecution's case. Now, apparently the prosecutor also showed up with a new district attorney. This district attorney appears to be on loan from the 18th Judicial District, a guy by the name of Grant Grossenbauer. Don't know him, never met him. Maybe I'd recognize his face if I saw him, but I do not know. There was also some evidence presented regarding the canine that arrived on the scene, and apparently the canine could not pick up a scent from Suzanne Morphew at the scene where the bike was in fact located, which is probably one of the issues as it related to the whole canine handler. So we'll have to see how that shakes out. Now, here's what I find that's interesting. I've often said, if you can control the definitions of words, you can control the conversation. Well, Iris Itan is doing this, and she is, you can see where this is going. She said she wants to get things set straight. "I want to get the facts straight," she quoted. "It's not a nobody homicide. It's a missing persons case." So the defense isn't even conceding that Suzanne Morphew is deceased. Interesting, interesting, interesting. Except, of course, when it comes to resolving the estate of Suzanne Morphew so that Barry Morphew could sell the property and then have her declared deceased. So we'll check, we'll obviously have to check that out. And one of the expert witnesses the defense wants to strike is a forensic nurse who looked at photos of Barry Morphew's scratches on his arms and hands, but did not meet and examine Barry Morphew in person. That'll be determined on April 29th. Unless this nurse has some sort of greater knowledge or training as it relates to scratches and can somehow tell if that was a human scratch or was that a guy that does landscaping that maybe gets scratches on his arms from bushes or other things, I'm not sure we're going to see that nurse testify at trial. At least my first instinct is that is not going to be the case. So I think it was basically a draw. Nothing bad happened to the prosecution today. They've got a new district attorney out there trying to help because it seems like everybody keeps leaving on this particular case that works for the prosecution, including obviously their lead investigators that they don't like what they're going to have to say so that they get them kicked off the case. We'll see how this goes. We'll still give Barry Morphew the presumption of innocence. All right. Next on the docket, more Alex Murdaugh drama. All right. Some new documents filed this month in court reveal some surprising financial twists with the Murdaughs. So John Marvin Murdaugh is Maggie Murdaugh's brother-in-law, and he was made the personal representative of the estate last year after Maggie and Paul Murdaugh were murdered. This was after apparently Maggie's sister's name was scratched off of the personal representative form and someone wrote Randolph Murdaugh III's name back in 2005 on the will. Now, according to the documents, Maggie Murdaugh had, get this, $57.77 left in her bank account, which was at the Bank of America. And that bank account was solely in Maggie's name. And that was at the time of her death. Now, in Maggie and Alex's joint Palmetto State Bank account, Maggie's share only amounted to $4,154.14. Now, that may seem like a lot of cash to the kind of average everyday Joe, but considering the Murdaughs are accused of stealing nearly $9 million from clients, specifically Alex Murdaugh, that's a pretty small drop in the bucket. So that leaves us with the question, did somebody empty Maggie's bank accounts after she was murdered? Or were the Murdaughs in such serious financial trouble back in 2021, which maybe led to the death of these individuals? Now, Maggie does seem to be somewhat asset rich. However, as we know, Alex sold her the Moselle property and the Edisto home, making her total real estate holdings worth over about $4 million. However, a $2.1 million was held on a mortgage on those properties, so it wasn't free and clear. Now, according to the documents also released, Maggie's owned an estimated $111,000 in other assets, primarily a car, which included a 2021 Mercedes, a Ford F-150, and an older Land Rover. A big question that remains unanswered still is, did Maggie Murdaugh have a life insurance policy? Now, in the probate filings, John Marvin Murdaugh wrote none when asked to list insurance on the life of the decedent. He also wrote none under life insurance that would be payable to beneficiaries. And also, interestingly enough, John Marvin wrote none when asked to list any stock, bonds, or retirement accounts payable to the estate or to the beneficiaries. The Murdaughs made their millions by suing insurance companies through the Murdaugh's law firm, So I think it's a little unlikely that Maggie didn't have a life insurance policy on herself for the benefit of her children. Now, as we know, Alex Murdaugh certainly had an insurance policy on himself when he allegedly tried to commit suicide and stage it so that his son could receive a $10 million life insurance policy. On top of the mortgages that Maggie owed, she also owed $2,500 to the Coastal Electric Cooperative and owed $6,500 for unpaid bills to an interior design company. Now, according to other sources close to the Murdaughs, Maggie had been worried about the family's financial situation leading up to her murder. What do we say, ladies and gentlemen, here at Crime Talk? It's always about the money. Follow the money. I'm telling you, that's going to be the key in the Murdaugh case, the money. Well, next, when it comes to politicians, I think you can always say, it's always about corruption. It's corruption. And that appears to be no different in South Dakota. Remember that South Dakota attorney general that we talked about, Jason Ravsburg? Well, he will not be impeached after he killed a man in a hit and run back in September of 2020. Now, Ravsburg hit Joseph Beaver, or Bover, while walking along a highway and told authorities that he thought he had hit a deer. Now, a special investigative committee of the South Dakota House of Representatives held a closed-door meeting to discuss whether or not to impeach Ravsburg, which would have been the state's first impeachment trial in the state's history. The committee decided it did not have sufficient grounds to remove Ravsburg from his post, with 6 out of the 8 members voting against impeachment. The 6-2 vote was along party lines. The full South Dakota House of Representatives will meet back on April 12th to decide if it accepts the committee's report. Now, Governor Kristi Noem, a Republican, slammed the decision, stating that Jason Ravsburg killed a man, lied to investigators about the events of that night, and attempted to cover it up. That's according to the governor. I can't disagree with her on this one. Jason Bover's family deserves justice. Talk of Ravsburg impeachment began in February after Noem released the video of the attorney general stumbling through an interview with investigators. We put that video up. One of the worst interviews I've ever seen, particularly by a law enforcement official that's being suspected of a crime. Now, ultimately, the good attorney general was charged with 3 misdemeanors, pled no contest to 2 counts of reckless driving. He paid 2 $500 fines and a $3,000 court costs that were imposed. He also had to take part in a driving education course. And he settled out of court with the Bover family. The reason why they are saying that the impeachment wouldn't go forward was because that he hadn't pled guilty to any basically high crime or misdemeanor, because it was a no contest plea. Now, where I come from, a no contest plea is basically saying, I'm not saying I did, I'm not saying I didn't, but I'm willing to accept the punishment that comes with entering a no contest plea. It's treated as a guilty plea. I have to agree with the good governor on this one. He hit a man. He was probably drunk. The sheriff let him borrow his own personal car to drive there, then comes back with his chief of staff the next day and realizes, oh my gosh, I may have hit somebody. What gave that up? Maybe the fact that the deceased man's glasses were in your front seat? That could have been a little bit of a giveaway. Yeah, this guy, he's a dirtbag. He needs to be impeached because he won't resign. And guess what? The people of South Dakota, if you keep this guy in office, I guess that's the classic saying of you get the government that you deserve. I certainly think that there ought to be somebody out there that could be an actual example of good conduct when it comes to law enforcement, being the highest law enforcement officer in the state. But hey, if that's who you want, South Dakota, and I love South Dakota, I really like South Dakota, but this guy, he's a dirtbag. He needs to go. Next on the docket, a judge has thrown out a confession in a quadruple homicide. So the judge agreed to partially omit the confession of a physical therapist accused of murdering his wife and 3 children back in 2020 at their home in a Disney town ahead of his trial because he hadn't been read his Miranda rights and apparently high on Benadryl. So Anthony Todt, T-O-D-T, is charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of animal cruelty in the fatal stabbing of his wife, Megan, their kids, Alex, Tyler, Tyler and Zoe, ages 13 to 4. And don't forget the dog, Breezy. Well, when Tot's family was found back on January 13th of 2020, his wife and kids had been wrapped in blankets and drugged with Benadryl. They had also been suffocated, stabbed, and left to rot in the home for about 2 weeks. Tot, who's pled not guilty, spoke to detectives after he was arrested at the hospital in January 2020, but he wasn't properly informed of his Miranda rights before the interview. This was according to the motion filed by the defense back on August 31st of 2021. People know, at least if they watch Crime Talk, police are required by law to read the constitutional rights that people have. It's called Miranda rights. If they are in custody and they're being questioned about what puts them in custody. This was not something new, it should not have been anything that surprised these police officers. Miranda goes back to a 1966 United States Supreme Court case. And if officers fail to do so, then prosecutors can't use those statements that the suspect says at trial. Now, during the first interview with police, Tot initially confessed. It took a further two rounds of interrogation before officers realized that they hadn't read Tot his rights according to the motion. Now, before the former father of three repeated his involvement in the killings, Tot was suicidal and had diminished capacity because he was under the influence of a Benadryl overdose. The court said the combination of factors led to an invalid waiver of Tot's rights, and the lawyer further argued that detectives may have been tempted to cut corners to obtain a confession in their rush to solve the high-profile murder with no available concrete evidence. Now, since his jail confinement, Tot has blamed his wife for the slaying in a letter to his father and a jailhouse phone conversation with his sister, claiming that it was Megan who allegedly killed the children and then herself after prior unsuccessful attempts, and that he could not stop her because he was not in the home at the time. Now, his trial is set to take place in Osceola County Courthouse in little over 2 weeks, starting on April 14th. That's the remedy, ladies and gentlemen. The police have got to do it right. Don't take shortcuts. It reminds me of that scene in Something About Pam. And I'm telling you, if you haven't seen this show, ladies and gentlemen, you got to watch this. This is hilarious. They're literally interrogating a guy for like a day, literally a day. And at some point they realize they haven't given him his Miranda rights. So they kind of go back in as, you know, formality and all. And at one point they said, this guy's so stupid, he doesn't even know he needs a lawyer. It is the funniest show that I have seen in a long, long time. Kind of dark, but funny. All right, speaking of exercising constitutional rights, Troy Driver, he was apprehended last Friday in connection with Naomi Irion's disappearance. Now, her family announced that the driver's in custody, but is apparently refusing to speak with police, which is his constitutional right to do so. And why the family is stating that information, well, that creates a situation where they're trying to taint the jury pool. Just got to keep that to themselves. It'll never come in at trial, and if anybody mentions that, it'll be an immediate mistrial. And as you may recall, the search for the 18-year-old continues. The FBI is offering $10,000, leading to information to her safe return. Irion's brother, Casey Valley, has been sharing updates on his Facebook and says that the family has no reason to believe that Naomi is not alive. And Valley stressed that the driver's safety was very important to his family until his sister is located, and that he would not want to see any harm come to him. The man is only the person that he is aware of that can give information that can lead to Naomi's whereabouts and bring her home. Now, Mr. Driver is scheduled to appear in the Canal Township Justice Center next week for arraignment. Criminal records showed that Mr. Driver, who previously lived in California, was convicted in 1997 of an accessory to a murder after the fact in relation to the killing of a 19-year-old Paul Stephen Rodriguez. And Driver's rap sheet in California also includes convictions on charges of second-degree robbery and burglary. And police have not said whether or not they believe Driver is the man seen in the surveillance footage just before Irion's disappearance. Now, in the clip, Irion can be seen parking her car in the Walmart lot and sitting in the driver's seat while she waited for a company shuttle to take her to a job at Panasonic. The unidentified man wearing a hoodie was filmed approaching Naomi's car after circling the area, and it's unclear if she was in the store at the time he broke into the vehicle or if she was in the car, but footage shows the pair driving off with the man in the driver's seat. The pair then drove out of the lot, and the man was behind the wheel. Her abandoned car was found less than a mile away on March 15th, but there's been no sight of Naomi since that date. If anyone has any information, they should contact the police. All right, remember that Florida biker murder, right? The couple that was coming back from some festivities related to the Florida Bike Week? Well, that guy that is accused, and we'll give everybody the presumption of innocence like we always do. Well, that guy has been indicted. A Florida grand jury has indicted this gentleman for allegedly stabbing a Daytona Beach couple who were on their way home from Bike Week festivities. John Robert Messian, 32, faces two counts of first-degree murder with a weapon. Police say that he killed Terry Altman and Brenda Altman basically just at random. Bystanders found the Altmans early Sunday morning on March 6, about a mile from their house. And officers released images of a person of interest. It turned out to be Messian. Messian arrived in Daytona Beach the day before the murder on a bus and then left the same day of the murder. The police chief is saying that Mr. Messian has confessed to the killings, and the police wrote that they obtained other video which showed the suspects walking up to the victim in an apparent attempt to catch up to them. Other footage, presumably from after the killing, shows the suspect with what police theorized to be blood on his pants, according to court documents. Mr. Messian remains in custody without bond. Once again, we'll give him the presumption of innocence. Okay, apparently you can get out of jail in California for just about anything. Meet Frederick Newhall Woods. He's now 70 years old, and he was convicted of hijacking a school bus full of children and holding them and their driver for $5 million in ransom back in 1976. Well, guess what? He's getting paroled. Frederick Woods was found suitable for parole at a hearing last Friday, and parole commissioners reportedly decided Woods no longer is a danger to the public, probably because he's so old. Well, Woods was the mastermind regarding the kidnapping plot after being inspired by the 1971 Clint Eastwood film, Dirty Harry. Mr. Woods and his accomplices, brothers Richard and James Schoenfield, buried the children, who were between the ages of 5 to 14, along with their bus driver, in a ventilated underground bunker east of San Francisco. After 16 hours, the victims were able to dig their way out of and escape from their kidnappers while they were asleep. Richard and James Schoenfield were freed years ago. An appeals court ordered that Richard Schoenfield be released in 2012, and former Governor Jerry Brown paroled James Schoenfield in 2015. Now, Woods became eligible for parole in 1982, but has been previously denied on 17 occasions. Now, the panel's proposed parole decision will become final within 120 days, and once the decision becomes final, California Governor Newsom has 30 days to review the decision and whether to allow it to stand or refer it to the full parole board. Now, Newsom can't block the parole decision because it's not a murder conviction. Woods and the Schoenfelds planned their crime for more than a year, and in 1976, all pled guilty to kidnapping. They were each given 27 life sentences without the possibility of parole, but an appellate panel, which included the governor's late father, State Judge William Newsom, reduced the kidnappers' sentences in 1980, giving them a chance at parole. Now, once retired, William Newsom advocated for their release in 2011, noting that no one was seriously physically injured during the kidnapping. Mr. Woods apologized for his action, telling the parole panel that he had empathy for the victims, which I didn't have then. Woods added that he had a character change since then. He was 24 years old at the time of the kidnapping, and he takes full responsibility for his heinous act. Survivors of the kidnapping said during the hearing that Woods has yet to make amends for their crime and that he is still a millionaire. They said he could have done much more, adding that the settlement paid to survivors was enough to pay for some therapy, but not enough to buy a house. The survivors have alleged that they suffer from anxiety and nightmares as a result of the kidnapping. And during the same interview, survivors Jennifer Brown Hyde said she felt like an animal going to the slaughterhouse. Now, the prosecutor said that Wood's disciplinary infractions in prison showed that he has not yet learned to follow the rules. But Woods and his attorney, Dominique Baños, emphasized that he had a discipline-free record since his last parole hearing in October of 2019. Wow. He was able to go 2 years with the COVID and everything without disciplinary issues in his late 60s. Wow, this guy's going to last a really long time on parole. Well, despite this, the district attorney still argued against Woods' release, saying he's ruined dozens of lives and that he has demonstrated the capacity to do this kind of crime, to mastermind and carry out something like this. Yeah, he may get out, but he's not going to last long if he can't go almost 3 years without an infraction in prison. Well, and as we learn from this story, prison can be a dangerous place, particularly when you harm children. A prisoner in North Carolina who was convicted of murdering a toddler was killed in a group attack by other inmates. This is according to prison officials in North Carolina. The North Carolina Department of Public Safety said that Semajas, S-E-M-A-J-S, you guys tell me how to pronounce that one, Short, Mr. Short, he was 24, was attacked by other inmates at a correctional institution in Windsor, North Carolina. Now, prison first responders performed life-saving measures until the paramedics arrived, who worked to resuscitate Mr. Short. But Mr. Short was pronounced dead by paramedics. Three other offenders were injured during the assault and were treated for non-life-threatening injuries. The facility went into lockdown as the investigators worked to find out exactly what happened. I'm sure there were no witnesses to be had. Well, Mr. Short was convicted of second-degree murder back in 2017. He'd been serving a 31-year sentence due to his plea, where he pled guilty to killing a 2-year-old when he was 17 years old. He was projected to be released from custody in 2042. Prison can be a dangerous place, ladies and gentlemen. Who knows? Maybe he just didn't get along with people. Who knows? All right, next story. We've said don't live stream the crime scene before, but this wasn't a crime scene. Now, this could be kind of funny if you think about it. But a police officer in Georgia has resigned from the police force after video of him went viral on TikTok the other day. Now, the video shows the Millen police officer, a guy by the name of Larry Benjamin Thompson, allegedly engaged in some sort of sex act with an unknown woman outdoors behind his service vehicle while he's in uniform. Now, the video was taken by a TikTok user, a guy by the name of Dylan Cole, from atop a telecommunications tower in Millen without the officer's knowledge. The video went viral and got over 16 million views. Now, following the officer's resignation, a record of his past misconduct had come about. In 2019, Thompson T-boned a car while going 86 miles per hour on a small town of 3,500, roughly 75 miles northwest of Savannah, while rushing to a crime scene, killing a 76-year-old man who was driving the other vehicle. And in 2017, Thompson shot another officer in the arm. It was determined to be an accident, as they referred to as an accidental discharge. Thompson claimed that he was cleaning his gun when it got jammed and went off, and the findings report asserted that the weapon had no malfunctions that would cause an unintentional discharge. So he was classified as negligent. And most recently, in 2021, a woman who he'd had a prior relationship with told the police that he was harassing her. And Mr. Thompson admitted to running the woman's tags to find her new address after she had moved, claiming he was just trying to return some old items to her. He was subsequently suspended for 2 days, the filing show, and had to complete a Georgia Bureau Investigation Security Awareness training, because guess what? They can't use those background searches for personal use. Now, take a look at this video here, okay? Yes, it's up high. He's behind his patrol vehicle. It looks like he may be trying to shine the light better while this young lady is on her knees looking for her contacts or something. I can't tell. It looks like she's moving around. You be the judge. You tell me what they're doing. But apparently, she didn't find her contact and he resigned. So, you just can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. You can't make it up. All right, and next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. An Ohio man is facing a theft charge after allegedly stealing $336.93 worth of sex toys from an adult novelty store. A store employee identified the shoplifting suspect as a white male carrying a large knife on his hip. When the officers arrived, they spotted Joshua Millsap exiting the store and entering the passenger side of a Ford sedan parked outside. When the officers confronted Millsap, he reportedly admitted to stealing the merchandise from the store, and Millsap was cited for misdemeanor theft. Now, since then, he's been the subject of an outstanding warrant in another jurisdiction, and he is still in custody of the Ohio State Police. Now, Mr. Millsap is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Yes, you shouldn't take things that don't belong to you, but apparently he was a little too embarrassed to go up to the cash register to pay for his items. Instead, he's been arrested, and now he's made the dumb criminal contestant of the day. So I think it's only fair to list the items that Mr. Millsap was too embarrassed to go to the checkout stand. You know, it's kind of your dumb criminal punishment that you have to take when you're a contestant here. One, he is alleged to have shoplifted a shapeshifter, the anal version, for $99, a vibrating ring, $67, a three-pack cock ring for $7.99, a universal pump sleeve for $10.99, a urethral sound trainer, $42, inflatable G vibrator, $99, and stay hard donut rings, $6.99. See that, Mr. Millsap? Wouldn't that have been easier just to pay for those items than have the whole world forever known with your picture and these items associated with them? Congratulations, you are our dumb criminal of the day. Of course, we'll give you the presumption of innocence, but you know the drill. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.